Curiosity. What are you so curious about? Everything. Mr. Curiosity.
Alrighty, folks, Joe Snedeker here, but you know me as Mr. Curiosity on this podcast. I think we're on like number 58, 59. We're kicking butt here on Mr. Curiosity. And remember, all the past episodes are available on Spotify, iTunes, WNEP.com, wherever you want to go. Now, we have a good guest this week because we just met. And he's got a great beard and he's got great stories to tell, I hope. It's Nick Bruce from the Wisecrackers Comedy Club. And if you're saying, well, why are you talking to Nick Bruce? I don't know why I am, Nick. Why am I?
Because I'm the guy behind it currently.
No, because you're going to be fun and you have fundraising opportunities.
I have a lot to talk about. I have fun stories, I have bad stories, and I've got to tell you about fundraising. And if you've got a fundraiser you want to do, I got you covered.
Excellent. I want to first start out the reason we connected. And this goes back, I think, 10 years, maybe 12, maybe more. But my wife, when my kids were younger, used to be a classic PTA type mom, and she'd want to do these fundraisers. So she put together this fundraiser at Wisecrackers. This is, like I said, when my kids were under 10 years old and we were 10 years younger, and she became in contact then with your dad.
Right? Oh yeah.
The great Scott Bruce. And they would always email and call each other and set these things up, and she would make hundreds, if not thousands of dollars for her good cause, you know, PTA related fundraisers. And that's how I got to know your dad, who seemed to me like we instantly hit it off like a cool guy. Yeah. And I love comedy and I go to all these comedy shows. And then 10 years pass by, nothing. And then all of a sudden, one of my buddies goes, hey, I went to Wisecrackers last weekend. I go, oh, really? You see my buddy? You see my buddy Scott Bruce there? He goes, no. But there was some other guy that handed me his card and it was you.
It's me. I'm his son. I'm his,
His unbelievable. Kid,
his extra, his right hand man, his consigliere, if you want. I'm his everything now. Our fundraising has always helped a lot of people. I'm glad that we were able to help your wife and everybody with that PTA for years. We've raised well north of $1 million now since we've been open, for 22 years since we've been open. It's just how much money we've donated to every charity we can possibly think of, anything. No fundraiser is too small, no fundraiser is too big. We can fit anything into our room. And if you can't do it at our place, we'll come to you.
I love it. So before we get into the fundraising, I'd like to go back. So because I'm not playing dumb here. I don't know. Where are you guys from? Where's your dad from? And how do you just start a comedy club and create a logo and go attack hotels? I don't even know how that works.
So it's a family run operation, if you didn't know.
Yeah, but how do you do that? No one, you know, says, oh, I'm going to start a comedy club. Like, what did he do before that? Where are you from?
My father grew up in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and then moved to State College when he was a child still. And then traveled all over the country, lived everywhere. And then in the late 70s, he started a company called Center Chemical, which was a cleaning supply company in State College. And
get out of here.
Yeah. And that's how he met my mom. And they lived together for years and worked together and all this stuff. And then one day he just said, I'm going to start doing stand-up comedy. And this was late 70s, early 80s. And he would drive to New York every night from State College to open mic nights because there wasn't anything in State College. Yeah, I'm dead serious. And then he really got started, I think, around 84, 85. And that's when he moved to Brooklyn, New York. And that's where I was born.
So he takes your mom and says, we're going to Brooklyn. I'm doing comedy full time. I mean, how does that work? That's a risk.
Yeah, he was doing comedy full time. He was doing that, and then at that time he became the house MC, the master of ceremonies, the first comedy MC at the Dangerfields in New York. He was close friends with Rodney and a lot of people. Anybody from Tim Allen to Ray Romano to Louis Black, you name it. My father's worked with them because they all got started together in small little clubs.
You're right. So late 70s into the 80s, it was when comedy was really on that uptick in popularity.
Yeah, especially into the early 90s even. Like, he worked with everybody that, you know, went somewhere and was somebody, and he was like, I'm going to do comedy and just keep going with it and see what's going on. And
But you have no memories of this. You were just what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old at the time, like when he started all this?
Yeah, no, I remember a little bit of it. I don't remember living in Brooklyn. We then moved to Montclair, New Jersey.
Okay.
And he's still doing comedy. He was on cruise ships for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, he did cruise ship. Because at the time, and it still is today, that's like the big money for comics. Like, if you're not like, you know, John Mulaney, Louis C.K., Tom Segura, I'm blanking on people's big names, you know,
Bill Burr,
stuff like that. Those type of people names. You're not doing arenas, you're doing cruise ships, and you're making, you know, big money for a week to do cruise ships. I hope that construction's not too loud in the background.
I don't hear anything. So okay, I'm curious about, though, like, so does he give up the chemical business or cleaning business, or is he just a rich guy, or how do you do
it? No, no, we were never rich and we're still not. No, he actually, my grandfather used to run it together after he opened it. And then he just sold it to my grandfather, which my grandfather and then my uncle ran it for, I would say 35 years.
Oh, so they kept this thing going, and your dad took himself out.
Yeah, he totally took himself out. He was like, I'm going full comedy all the time.
Get out of here.
Yeah, he once he sets his mind to something, he stays with it.
Now, am I getting too personal, though, if I say, does your mom work now for a living back then, or was she okay with this, or was she like, oh, come on, Dad? Come on, Scott, your dad.
At the time, we lived in New Jersey, and she was a stay-at-home mom, and he was, you know, working. And then when we moved to this area, she did like odd jobs, like she was a school lunch lady, and just did like, you know, things.
Oh, that's excellent.
Help out.
But so he makes a living doing this, either emceeing, doing comedy, gathering up.
He was a national headliner for years. The emceeing was just the like on the week, like, you know, the nights that he could work there. But I mean, he's worked in Vegas, cruise ships, you know, everywhere around the world. You name it, he's probably been there. He's opened for like Aretha Franklin. He opened for Ray Charles in the 70s or the 80s. I mean,
like, so when he's doing all that. Are you like, what's your earliest memory? Or are you in high school at the time and your dad's this famous comic? Like, how's all that work?
No. Actually, I wish I had the photo here. It's at my other office. There's it was a great joke. Right before COVID started, my dad always said, oh, I'm off to work with so-and-so. And I didn't know who it was because I was a little tiny baby. You know, like I was 6, 7 years old. I don't know who these people are.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a photo of my dad sitting with Barney and one of the other dinosaurs. And at like a backyard birthday party. And when I was a kid, in my mind, I thought that's what he meant by working with famous people. But then there's also photos of me sitting on Rodney Dangerfield's lap.
Get out of here. Come on. Yeah. I want to see that picture. Jeez.
I'll find it and send it to you, Joe.
So he's doing this through your adolescence, correct? Like, you're a teenager and he's a comic.
Yeah. I mean, he still does stand up on it from time to time, but yeah, he did it. I think he did it almost 40 years.
So is he the kind of guy then, because I have this double life too, where my kids used to see me on TV during the weather and I'd be all hyped up, pumped up, acting different, acting weird. And then I'd come home and you're just dad.
Yeah.
Like, did he has both schemes worked out. He's funny guy, but yet he's just dad at home, or is he always funny dad, or how does that work?
I didn't see his stand up until I was probably 12, because it's not like anything blue. There's not like a lot of dirty jokes in it. He can go both ways.
Yeah.
But I never saw it until I was older. But at home he was fun. Yeah, he always made me laugh. And
that's good.
It was also that he wasn't home a lot, so like I didn't get the chance to hang out with him. So when he was home, I was like, oh, I gotta hang out with my dad. You know, we would build stuff together. We would have fun. He would go to my baseball games, stuff like that. And it was a lot of cool time to hang out with my dad when he was home.
So is he then leaving the business when you start becoming 17, 18, 19, thinking, what am I going to do for a living or no?
No. He was still, at that time, Wisecrackers had been open. Let's see, that would have been 2007. So Wisecrackers, the comedy club themselves, would have been open about 8 years at that point.
Oh, so okay. So this is good because I need this timeline mentally. So you're saying around 2000 is when Wisecrackers started. Maybe.
Yeah, Wisecrackers itself became a comedy club in 1999.
Okay.
It was just like a pop-up comedy club. Like we would do it at different places around the area.
And how old are you at the time?
1999, I would have been 11.
Oh, okay. So this is very conscious and you're almost entering puberty and you're friends and your dad is a comedy club and
I'm getting a picture.
This is good.
So by 2000 we were incorporated, and then after that we became we had the standard one at Marvelous Mugs or Brass Buckle.
Boom! That's where I saw you guys all the time.
I ask
right there because I don't understand, how does that work? Okay, I start a comedy club, you incorporate it, it's called Wisecrackers. Then what? Then you need venues.
Yeah. So we were at our first locations were like Gennetti's in Hazleton.
Okay.
On 309. And then we were at like Marvelous Mugs or the Brass Rail or anything like that. And then we were at Meadow Ave, the hotel in Scranton. I can't remember the name. It was a Clarion at that point.
Yes.
So when we were at all those locations, we would approach them and say, hey, you guys want to put a comedy club in here? And they would say yes or no. And it was a lot of back and forth. It was a hard time finding places. But luckily, we're at Mohegan Sun now, Mohegan Sun Casino in Pocono, in Wilkes-Barre. And it is great. And they approached us.
Oh.
They came to us when we were at, we were still in Scranton at the Clarion. And they came in and said, hey, we want to have a comedy club. We like having the local name because you guys are well known in the area and you're already established and you know how to book, you know how to run shows. We've been to your shows, which really already blew our mind because they did their scouting, they did their work.
Wow.
And they approached us and we came and we toured the facility, like, you know, the building, we saw what they wanted and they gave us a proposal. And my father was like ecstatic because it was security. He's like, hotels, you never know when they're going to go and say, get out of here.
Yeah.
But the casino was just like over the top with us and we were over top with them. So,
that's so cool. And I imagine like a hotel is more of like a part-time thing. Like you bring your signage in and then you get out. Isn't this more permanent now at the casino?
Yes, it's more permanent. And it's honestly, it feels like a family there with us. Especially we've been there for almost 8 years now. And during COVID, they would call us to check on us and everything.
Oh, that's excellent.
It was really good. And, we were trying, you know, we've been there for, like I said, almost 8 years. And we were trying always to do different things to work with them and trying to figure out how we can make it better for them and for us. And they're always ecstatic with what we do.
Oh, that's so cool. See, so when you do this and establish a place, whether it's at a casino or the hotel, now you get on the phone. I'm sure your dad had all these contacts, but you start then saying, okay, hey, you want to do Saturday, August 15th, blah, blah, blah. And you put together an itinerary for a group.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start selling tickets, but it's a gamble, right?
It's a big gamble. Yeah. That's the big thing. So I've taken over a lot of the booking because not to keep bringing up COVID, but we were closed for a year and 2 months almost.
And did that suck?
Yeah.
Look at him laugh.
Hey,
no, that was great, right?
No, Joe, it was a fantastic, you know, when they first said it was 2 weeks, I was like, man, a 2 week vacation. I've never had that before. And then by the end of the fourth month, I was like, wow, what am I going to do with my time?
Oh my goodness. Right. Cause this was your full-time gig, right?
This is my full-time gig. And let me tell you, when I say that I'm not hireable in any other position, because the jobs I've had are basically, you know, a manager at a GameStop or a cell phone store. You know, nobody's looking at my music engineering degree and going, yeah, we want you today.
Oh, I was going to get into that. So did you end up going to college? That's what you did. Music engineering. Huh?
Yeah. I went to Luzerne County Community College. I went for music engineering, and then I went back for a little bit, for journalism. And,
okay.
I mean, I use my music more than I use my journalism, but
Sounds like you're a creative guy.
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, during the pandemic, I mean, I just had a hard time finding work, making money. I lived off my savings, which, you know, it was not easy. I met a girl. It's going great.
Is are there siblings in the family, like your brothers or sisters that were competing for the comedy club dynasty?
I have a younger sister. She works for us from time to time, but she is not interested really in taking over the business.
Oh, okay.
I really wasn't either, but at the time, this would have been 2014.
Okay.
I needed a new job, and I told my parents I would just fill in and help out until I found a thing, because I had planned on moving out of the area.
Well, I don't know what you mean. I thought you were always in Wisecrackers. What were you doing there?
I helped out throughout and did other jobs, like jobs. But like, if they needed me for something, I would, you know, help out throughout the gigs.
So when you were in college, I guess what I'm saying is when you were 18, 19, 20, 23, you weren't thinking, hey, I'm going to build a career around what my dad started. I'm going to pick up where he left off. Was it a background plan? Was it plan B? Was it plan A?
No, when I was in college, I really thought I was going to go into the music industry, not knowing that it's really hard to get into. But at the time, I had been working at a GameStop, and I was the youngest person to become a manager, and I was making pretty good money, and then I broke my back.
No.
I fell off a cliff. It was a really exciting weekend for my parents to get that phone call. A funny story about that. I was the designated driver at the party, and I fell off the cliff.
So, what do you mean? A car and a vehicle?
Nope, I walked away from the party, missed a step, and fell 50 feet. So
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. 50 feet is a deadly fall.
You're telling me and all the doctors that worked on me.
What'd you break? What'd you break on that fall?
Compression burst, L1 vertebrae, broke my wrist, chipped a tooth, couldn't remember things for a couple months.
Dude.
Yeah. Yeah. But my parents, I called my parents, and my mom picks up and I go, you might want to put dad on the phone, because he definitely could handle it way better than her.
I could have fell off a cliff. That's a call no parent gets. Come on.
She picks up and he's like, hello. And I'm like, hey, I fell off a cliff and I'm in the emergency room.
Oh, man.
He's like, I'll be right there. It was a weird day for him.
He probably put that in one of his stand-up acts, right?
I don't know if he ever did. he might.
So then the music stuff doesn't work out. The career is in waxing and waning, and you're thinking.
Yeah, I was just doing weird things. I was a security guard for a long time at a building that was paying really well, and I was happy with that. And then they started to cut my hours, and they changed a bunch of stuff. And one day, it was around Christmas time, and I had requested the day after Christmas off because I had family coming in and I wanted to see them. And the company was like, no. And I'm like, I'm the best worker here. I never take days off. I only need one day. It's not even Christmas Day. It's the day I'm working Christmas Day, but I need the day after off. And they said no. So I put my 2-week notice in the next day after Christmas Day. And then I told my parents, I was like, I just need a job for a couple months. And it's been 8 years.
There you go. If it had to happen then.
Yeah.
But I'm sure.
Yeah, I love it. And I hate it at the same time. Because,
listen, that's most people at work, just so you know.
Yeah, okay? Yeah, I know. But it's one of those things that, like, you know, I wake up at, you know, anywhere between 9:30 and 11:30 in the morning, and my phone doesn't stop ringing until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Is that right? And now here I'm bothering you with the podcast.
Oh, this is fun. Okay. I'd rather do this than answer a text message that says, hey, can you get me work this weekend, when they know that I cannot get them work this weekend.
You're talking about a comic doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Good. So here was where we got to dive in now. Okay. Yeah. So now I'm not that entrenched in the comedic world, but I have my favorites like everyone. I'm a big Bill Burr fan. I listen to his podcast. I used to go to all these comedy clubs, and I always wondered, because how does it even start? How do you, let's say you are a pretty good comedian, you're brushing up your skills, you're not a Bill Burr, but you can pull in a crowd, make everybody laugh. These guys, whether they have part-time jobs, no job, full-time jobs, from what I hear, it's like what you said about your dad. It's in their blood and they can't do anything else. They just have to get on stage and do their work. So do they then call someone like you?
So, I mean, if you are already doing stand-up, I would recommend sending me an email with a video. If you've never done stand-up, I would say start doing open mic nights. That's the best way to start trying out stand-up. I won't put anybody on my stage that hasn't had stage time. All of the comedians that we've put on have at least a minimum of 5 years experience. Some of them maybe have two, but their two are really solid 2 years of experience.
Okay. So you're like a top tier, comedy club, where others will say, okay, whatever, we'll give you a try. Cause I've seen some low.
We just had my buddy, Paul Spratt. He's a local comedian. He grew up around here, but he moved to New York for many years.
Right.
The pandemic ruined things, so he had to come back, but he just taught a workshop class at our club. It was a couple of Mondays in a row. And then he taught had a big ceremony with everybody got stage time. And that's a good way to get started if you've never done stand-up, because it's about the structure of the jokes. It's not so much about the, oh, I'm funny, because everybody can be funny.
Yeah.
The way you write and structure a joke is really important. The way you can figure out how to make timing work and stuff, that's a really important thing. I heard Bill Burr opened with the, there was a possibility. I don't know if you saw Bill at the arena the other week.
Missed it. It was out of town.
I heard that he opened with the, cause there was a tornado watch that night. I'm sure you knew about that.
Right.
he said that there was a possibility for tornado watch and we're in the safest building. And my friend actually was the driver for the arena that night and brought Bill to and from the hotel.
Really?
Yeah. And said, he tried that out in the car, and my friend wanted to say, well, the safest place would have been under a flower tent. And because that would have got a big laugh, because everybody remembers the flower tent that didn't get blown over in the last tornado. And he's like, I was embarrassed not to say it. And I would have said it.
Did he say Bill was a good guy in the drive?
Yes. He said he was extremely nice in the car. He's very fantastic and everything. So I'm glad to hear that.
He's just so unarrogant and regular guy-ish. When you listen to his podcast and he puts himself down, self-deprecating, and his self-deprecating humor is not for the humor, it's honesty.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beauty of Bill Burr. I love him.
Yeah, he's one of the best. He's just very, very funny.
So you are like the, if I'm reading you properly, I didn't know this, you're like the comedic czar. You're the one who says, no, I'm sorry, you can't be at our club, or you can. I mean, and then we'll book you or I will not. Like, you're the guy that people are sweating talking to. Are they going to take me? Are they going to take me?
I mean, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but yeah, I have. In the last 2 years, I have taken over lots of hats at this job. And one of them is now booking agent. We used to have a great booking agent, Linda Rowe, out of New York. My father worked with her since the 80s. And when, you know, COVID hit, we couldn't afford to keep her on anymore. So we had to let her, like, we told her it was no hard feelings. She understood. And I took over booking, and I get probably 100 videos a week.
Get out of here. Yeah. I did not realize
so that. I felt bad every time you sent me, like, you sent me the email and I thought I had replied to do this.
Yeah.
And then I looked through my emails and I was like, oh no, I didn't reply to Joe.
Oh.
See. And I just, like, quick fired off the email, and then I was like, I marked it to, like, keep notification. I have to set up a new email for just people booking me. Or, like, wow. Sending me emails.
So you're that busy. That's excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun, but it's exhausting. Cause, like, I, by Friday night when I'm at the comedy club, I don't want to watch comedy anymore. It's upsetting because all the comedians are my friends and I like them very much. And I think they're all very funny. And then they're like, how did I do? And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't watch your set. I'm sorry.
Isn't that something? You can get sick of laughing. You can get sick of being entertained. You can get,
yeah.
I remember I could go see my best band in concert. And then after like an hour and a half, 2 hours, I'm like, okay, please stop.
Yeah.
What is this about human nature? Right.
I don't know. I remember I saw one of my favorite bands in 2019, three times in 1 year. And by the third time I saw them, I was like, you guys have 150 songs. You're going to tell me you play the same 30 songs every time?
I run into that same thing all the time, too. Make sure, right? All right. Yeah. So you are the comedic czar. Give me some good stories, good names, some comedians that we all know that somehow impressed you or depressed you. I don't know. Do you have anything good?
I can tell you the most depressing story that has ever happened. And I don't mind saying the person's name because I'll never work with them again.
Okay.
it's a big no. We had Gallagher back in 2017, and it was the real Gallagher, not his brother, so everybody knows. He was just the meanest person I've ever met.
Now, how old is Gallagher now?
Oh, he's close to 75.
Okay, so I guess my question is he one of almost like a jaded, washed up comic? Because he was big in the 70s. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah, he was just, I mean, he was just so, everything about him was like, I once had money.
Okay, gotcha.
Clearly squandered it all away and lost everything. He was just so rude.
To everyone,
and it was just so uncomfortable to be around.
Was he still funny?
I laugh at pretty much everything. if it's good, like I find a comedian funny, I find them funny forever. I didn't find Gallagher funny. I thought he was kind of offensive in some ways. And like, I'm not somebody that finds things offensive.
I was going to say in your business, you have to be unoffendable.
Yeah. He actually said so many things the one day on, I think it was Friday night. He said so many things. He walked a roller derby team of girls, that I was like, I didn't think that was possible. he indirectly called me fat. I know I'm a larger person, but he's like, your parents are Ann and Scott. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, you're awfully big bone compared to them. And I'm like,
oh, I see. So he took the, this isn't for comedic purposes. He's being.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He on Thursday night, he asked me to get him, I'll just say it. He asked me to get him dope. and in my mind, I'm like, what are you, like heroin or something? Like, I don't know you. I don't know where to get drugs. I'm like, not that cool.
See, folks, where else are you going to get behind the scenes of a washed up comic Gallagher? Yeah. Well, that's something.
Turns out he wanted weed.
Yeah.
Like, ah, come on, man. Just be a normal person and ask for it.
Dope.
It's easy to get, that's legal in most states.
Now. I know. I was going to say,
tell them to go
to Rite Aid.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. he was so weird. And then he was like complaining about our room and like the music. And I'm
really?
Like, I'm like, oh man, you're giving me a headache all night.
So when you have these comics, you have to then cater to them and take care of them and say, here's your desk, here's your water, here's where you stay.
Yeah. A lot of these comedians I've known for my entire life. I've known some of them for close to 30 years. Some of them I've known for
really.
I mean, some of the comedians I've known for as long as my father has known them, since I was a baby. You know, some of them come in, they say they remember holding me when I was a child. And I'm like, I don't remember that. But some of them are newer, some of them that I've brought in, I've made friends with, and like, they don't know my father. So it's like a weird now vice versa where like my dad will be like, hey, I need a comic for something. Can you recommend somebody? And I'll be like, oh, so-and-so. And he's like, I don't know them. I'm like, trust me, they're funny.
Okay.
And
he's more old school, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he knows his people. I know my people. It's a nice yin and yang kind of situation. But A lot of the comics, when I tell all the comics when I first meet them, between the hours of 7 and 11, when the show is getting ready and about to end, I am in professional manager mode. I take care of you. I'll handle anything you need. You ask me for something, I do it. You pretty much, you say jump, I say how high. But as soon as the show's over and we're hanging out, just having a drink after the show, whether it be in the casino, you know, whatever, we're just friends.
Oh, so yeah, you're not their go-to boy.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Right.
Yeah. Cause I don't like, if I buy a round of drinks for people,
yeah,
or if they buy a round of drinks, I'm like, this doesn't buy you credit with me. Like, I don't want you to call me and be like, hey, remember that time I bought you drinks? And I'm
yeah,
but like, that was after hours. Like, don't do that. Like, you know, cause you know how it is in professions with like entertainment, like, hey, I scratched your back, you got to scratch mine.
Sure,
now.
Sure, sure.
So I don't like doing those favors for people. Like that's uncomfortable stuff.
So do, speaking on that lines now, do most of the comics that you're getting, and I'm not talking about the top tier, but your average tier, do they, is it lucrative? Do they have other jobs? Is it too varied to even nail it down like that?
Yeah. So some of them will have other jobs. Some of them won't. A lot of them are teachers, surprisingly.
Summer's off.
They can get weekends off. You know, it's easy for them to leave at 3 o'clock on a Friday in New York and be in the Poconos by 6 o'clock. You know, some of them, this is their full-time gig.
Wow.
And a lot of my close friends have been doing this for close to 20 years and this is it. You know, other ones have been like doormen, security guards, chauffeurs, you know, you name it. They've been everything and anything under the sun.
And like, so we said earlier, they have that passion and they just have to get on stage. There's no other thing to do. They have to do that.
Yeah.
This is
a lot of them are also like, you know, they all try out acting. They do TV shows. So like, I have friends that have been on like a bunch of different TV shows or in commercials. I have a friend, his name's Sean Donnelly. He's very funny. But he was in an AT&T commercial, and I was just randomly at a bar one time in Lancaster before a concert, and I forgot that he was in the commercial, and I look up and I go, Sean?
Oh, he was right there.
And my friends were like, you know that guy? And I'm like, yeah, he's one of my closest friends.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was just, it's very weird when you see something like that happen.
Well, in your position, you're like boss man, manager. You almost need like a psychiatry degree. You know, you're dealing with emotions and you're probably doing it all. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right. Some of my favorites here. You got to give me a story. Do you know anything about Richard Lewis? My all time favorite. You know, what?
I don't
or you're not, he's too old for you, maybe, right?
He's not too old for me. I know who he is, but I've never met him. And
Richard Lewis?
I'm sure my father has, but I don't. I'll set you up with him to do a podcast. He'd love to.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
oh, my absolutely. Goodness. Would that be awesome or what? I'd love that. So, like the big names. So, you know, Larry David, Seinfeld, you know, some of the old school guys. You have any connections with them or no?
No, I don't have any old school connections. I met Lewis Black a couple years ago. He was doing a show at like Cove Haven in the Poconos.
Okay.
And he found out that I was in the room and he knew my father really well. And he called me in the back and he's like, hey, you know, how's your dad doing? And I'm like, he's good. He goes, is he still terrible at golf? Which is a joke because my dad's pretty good.
Yeah, okay,
gotcha. I'm like, yeah, he's still bad. And he goes, good to hear. And I know, you know, there's other people that have been around forever that I know, you know. I just saw Nate Bargatze a couple months ago and he knew my dad from back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, working in the city and stuff like that. But there's a lot of people that know who my father is.
The guy's a legend.
Yeah. David Tell was at the casino a couple months back and we were talking after the show and he was like, hey, your dad's Scott Bruce. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, I used to work with him all the time. And I'm like, yeah.
Well, so you're the next legend now. You're legend in training.
Yeah. Legend in training. I'm trying.
All right. I got to ask you now. So, The latest trend in the last, is it 4, 5, 6 years, is the woke culture and the cancel culture. Do you see that infiltrating the biz where some comedians are afraid to tell racial jokes, gay jokes, Polish jokes, Catholic jokes, I don't know, whatever the subject?
Sure. I see a little bit of it. I think it's a little difficult sometimes for some comics because their whole career is based around that. Like their material is based either on one side of the fence or the other. So it's either on the woke or the, like, I'm going to be, you know, the raunchy, dirty kind of comic.
Screw everybody. I'll say what I want.
Yeah. So I'm like pretty neutral. I like all of the comedy. If it's funny, it's funny. I've seen a lot of the woke comedians that are coming out and getting TV shows, and I've seen specials or something from them. And I'm like, who finds this funny? But then I realized that like the people in the levels above them that run in the TV stations are the ones that are like, we got to make sure that this person makes it because we want to look good to those people. So,
Are their targets then? So if you're a woke or a cancel culture comedian, what are your, let's just face it. Comedy.
Like a shock.
Comedy is other people's pain. That's just the way our brains are made.
It really is.
If you're not victimizing someone, there's very few things that are funny that there's not a victim. And for anyone listening out there, if you see someone slip on a banana peel, you're going to laugh.
Funny. Yeah.
You're going to laugh.
Yeah. I fall once a week and I laugh at myself. It's just funny.
Yeah. So when you make attacks at someone's sexuality or someone's religion, it's just that it's made for joke purposes.
Are
these people?
Yeah, you're not singling out if you're not singling out a single person or you're just pointing out just an obvious thing, then it's funny. It's just one of those things that like, I'm not politically correct all the time and it's hard. And it's one of those things that like, I have to, and I have to watch what I say because of my industry.
Me too.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know who the audiences are for what. There's definitely people that come to our room and are upset sometimes. And I'm like, I don't know if you heard the joke, but it had nothing to do with what you're saying.
So you do hear that. You do hear that.
Yeah. We've had it a couple of times in the last couple of months.
What do they want though? What do they want?
I don't know.
Why are they going to a comedy show?
I guess they expect something different. The big question everybody always asks me, is it funny? And I go, I mean, it's a comedy show. I would assume. I don't know. And then they go, you're probably paid to say this. And I go, I'm not paid to have this conversation. I'm not paid enough to talk to you about this. But people come in and when they're offended by something, I'm like, I don't think you actually listen to the joke. Because like, some of the jokes that people get upset by in our room that have happened, I mean, it's only happened probably twice in the last 2 years because I don't remember anything from the last few years.
Right. COVID
have really not been offensive. Like one of the jokes was Joey Vega, who's an extremely funny comedian. He's just one of the greatest Hispanic comedians of all time. He opens for Mark Anthony all the time.
Okay, right.
Mark Anthony, the legendary singer, Mark Anthony, like just hilarious. He was talking about how when he dies, he wants to come back as a white man because they get away with everything. Joey Vega is a Hispanic man.
Yeah.
It's a great joke.
Sure.
But it was pointing out the fact that like, obviously white people, white males specifically get away with everything. And this older black man, African-American man, stands up and just loses his temper over it. And the guy had been drinking, so I assumed that that was a starter to it.
Right.
And then he leaves and he's telling me that there shouldn't be any racial jokes. And I'm like,
my goodness.
The joke wasn't about race. It was about pointing out that white people are overprivileged. And the guy wouldn't, and he's like, oh, but they're fighting in Ukraine. And I go, I know we're fighting. I'm like, I am so lost in this conversation now. I'm like, I don't know what you're going on about, but I feel, and he just kept yelling at me. And I'm like, I can't help you if you're not going to ask me the right questions.
I hope you're not discouraged by that because.
Oh, no, I very rarely do. It's because it's.
That's you can't hard for me to even comprehend. I mean, 10 years ago, that would be laughable or.
Yeah.
That's something that would ever have occurred. And now
we had somebody one time get upset about a joke at the Chicago O'Hare International Airport. Somebody got upset that was a joke. They're like, F you, that's a great place. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you're mad that somebody's making fun of O'Hare International Airport? I don't even know. How are you
mad? But in the past, that these people were never really addressed or taken seriously. Now, for some reason, the weak and the they're getting something to stand on. And I don't know why that's happening, you know, to a point. Let me give an example. You see that thing in the background? I don't know if that's a clay head of me there. A gentleman in our WNEP viewing area made that. Great artist.
Yeah.
So once I got heads, I started showing in the backyard. Here's a head of Joe Snedeker. Here's a head of Tom Clark. Here's a head of Mindy Ramsey. One person once called and said, "How dare he show those heads on television? My husband was in a car accident and almost had his head severed in the accident. And now you're bringing back memories of that. I don't want Snedeker to show those heads on TV anymore." It's an example of what you deal with and I deal with. It's a personal twist on a narrative that is just bizarre to me.
I am so glad I don't have to deal with that one.
We get that on a weekly basis. Someone's offended by something in the news.
We had a
comedy. You would expect it more than anywhere else.
Yeah, we had a woman years ago. I remember this distinctly because it was very confusing to me. She was upset that one of the comedians wasn't bringing out his puppets fast enough.
What does that mean?
I don't. Joe, you're asking me, man.
Slow those puppets down. Slow those puppets down.
He didn't bring them out. He came on stage and did 10 minutes without the puppets.
Without the puppets. Okay.
He didn't come on stage with the puppets immediately.
She had her expectations. She's a puppet
she
lady.
She came out and she was just pointing at her phone. She's like, this picture, he has puppets. He has puppets. And I go, he has puppets. He'll bring them out. And she goes, where are the puppets? Where are the puppets? And I'm like, he just went on stage. I'm like, I can't go. What do you want me to go up and go be like, Vince, puppets now. Get the puppets out. And then she was mad that the one guy didn't look like his picture because he was younger in the picture but had shorter hair. He was a Native American guy, and he had like short hair and was like not as buff as he was in the photo, which is super weird.
She wanted the buff version. She wanted
She was like, "That's not him in this photo," and I'm like, "That's absolutely him." I'm like, "I've known that guy for 10 years." That's him. And then she goes in and sits down and he had the puppets out, but she was still mad that the puppets weren't the puppets that were in the photo then. Oh, it was.
So maybe she thought you had a stunt double or something there. And
I must have. She was like, we only get one night out a year. And this was the night we came to. And I'm like, I was like, I don't know how to help you. I can't tell you what's going to happen next, but he's going to have puppets. Trust me. It's not going to be the ones you're going to see in that picture maybe, but he's going to have puppets.
And maybe in part, this is probably all from the last 10, 15 years of cell phone integration into our lives. Because could you imagine in the past, you're an older guy like me, you go to a show, there's nothing being recorded. There's no pictures being taken. So whatever is said in there is said, and then you leave and it's forgotten. But now it's recorded and could be taken out of context and twisted and shown to the nation or the world. And that's a big part of the problem.
Yeah. That happened to Louis C.K.
Yes.
A couple years ago with his one bit that got taken out of context.
Yes.
Yeah. The other thing is, especially in the last couple of years, because of lockdown and everything, our attention spans have really dropped. Everyone from 21 to 55 to 108. Yeah.
55. Mine dropped. Right. How could you, how could you go to the bathroom without your cell phone?
Yeah. So we'll have people at the show and they'll be looking at their phones or they won't be paying attention. And I'm like, you paid to be here. Like, how could you not like look at your, there's a 6'2" man and three other comedians, two women, whatever, all in front of you on stage telling jokes, and you're going to be.
So you see that right while they're performing? You see that?
Yeah. Oh, and
it's staring at their cell phone.
It's just very weird. It's like they don't know that they're in a room with people. And then it's distracting to everybody around them because the room's dark. So if a phone lights up, everybody can see it. We have, you know, signs out that say, please don't bring your phone out, but it's just confusing, I guess. Who knows?
I'm so old that I remember going to concerts through the 80s where, and this is unheard of to even think for young people now, and no pictures permitted. That was the sign as you entered a concert. And this is pre-cell phone, so you couldn't even take like a Polaroid. You couldn't have a camera. They would check you to make sure there's no cameras. Now they wouldn't dare because a cell phone is a part of everyone's life.
I remember going to concerts in the early 2000s and they said pictures permitted. And then I remember that it was no cameras with unfixed lenses. Like,
you're right.
A detachable lens because they didn't want you to get like a big zoom lens.
Right.
Oh man. And now everybody carries around just this amazing camera in their pocket. And like, look, I take pictures at concerts, but I'm not, you know, above everybody blocking view. I keep it down low and then do my job and put it away.
But that surely has changed comedy. Really, and speaking of other changes, I got to get your opinion on this one. Okay. Sure. Again, maybe I'm the old guy, but I grew up even with like the late night comedians like Leno, Letterman, Carson. And those guys were like, how do I say this? They were almost abrasive. They were a little harsh. They weren't trying to win you over with their cuteness. And the trend now, I think, is, isn't it like you look at a Jimmy Fallon or even a Jimmy Kimmel? It's like they're saying, like me, I'll dance with you. I'll do all these things. Yeah. And to me, that turns me off. I want the older school comic back, the abrasive ones, the ones that are saying, I don't care if you like me or not. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah. So
how did that change?
I don't know how that changed. I think when Stephen Colbert made it to The Tonight Show or whatever he's on, I think the push towards everybody being kind of campy and fun became more of a thing. And then like the push towards more political satire and stuff became a thing. And I miss, like, I loved Conan. Conan was great.
Got a great podcast though.
Yeah. But Letterman and Leno were always great. They were the best.
Yes.
But when I started to watch Conan, I thought Conan was one of the best interviewers and one of the best TV hosts. Like, he had the greatest show, because I remember I started watching it in the early 2000s, so probably like 2001, 2002. And I watched it all the way until it was on TBS, and then after, and then I listened to his podcast, and I think he's just phenomenal.
He's so clever, so witty.
Yeah. And now I can't watch any of these late night shows. I liked Jimmy Kimmel back in the day.
Yes, with Adam Carolla
even when he got his late night with Jimmy Kimmel or whatever it is, and he had Dickie Barrett from the Mighty Mighty Bosstones being the voice and everything, he was fantastic. The show was great. It was just a very good formatted late night show, and then it just kind of like started to go down. And then I think the real decline was Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Fallon becoming these, like, Stephen Colbert going super political and Jimmy Fallon going super bubblegum pop. Like, I'm trying to make everybody like me.
Yeah.
I laugh at my own jokes all the time.
It's like created by Disney.
Yeah. It's trying to make it the short snippets that'll get it on the internet to get a million views. And that's what the money is now.
I guess so. But there's no soul. There's no integrity. It's gone.
No, it's really hard.
I want that sharp edge.
Yeah. I mean, what's his name? The Scottish guy.
He was excellent. Why can't we think of his name now? But he was the best.
Not Greg Kilborn, was it? No.
No. No.
That's going to drive me insane now.
I know. It's going to drive me insane. Should we get our cell phones out right now?
Yeah. Hey, Google.
Scottish comedian went off the air about 5-6 years ago. I love him. Come on. Who is this guy we're thinking of? Scottish. Did you get it yet?
Craig Ferguson.
He was the best. He was the last of
them. So good. And every time he'd come on and he would do something political, it felt like he wasn't trying to be pandering or anything.
Yes, no.
So it was one of those things. And now it's like everybody's trying to have their own voice, but at the same time, they're trying to just get the views for the next morning on YouTube or on Hulu yes. or Netflix or whatever their channel is for the next day. Because realistically, in some ways, a lot of like those late night cable shows are dying because of the retention of time on late night. And the clips are only what matters, you know?
Yes, but could you picture someone like Letterman or Carson dancing with Miley Cyrus?
No,
that wouldn't even make sense.
The only thing I could ever picture is like the weird animal attacks on the shows, or like,
well, you're right. Yeah. Carson did
like
get
those stuff, like those stuff, like that was always like, whoa, this is like way too much. Or like, yeah. I was like, but that was like interesting because they also did a good interview with that person then.
Yes.
And then like, I felt like these were just snippets now.
It's all fake. It's fake, yeah. fake.
It's
Leno was kind of a good transition. A lot of your people, I think, do you agree, don't like Leno? I thought he was a good mix of the two. He had creativity, he had edge, but he was also a little pop culture-y, goody-goody, but he still had edge.
I liked Leno. I liked his top, his some stuff. I like him a lot more now.
Because we have so little else.
I'm a big car guy, so I watch a lot of his car stuff.
great. I agree.
But he does great car interviews, and I like that. But I don't remember a lot because I watched Conan all the time. And then after the whole Conan and Leno fallout that I lost, I was just like, I'm team Conan. So
you like Conan Wants a Friend? You listen to his podcast then? You like it?
Yeah. I used to listen to it a lot. I haven't listened to it in a while. I don't get a lot of time. And then when I want to listen to something on podcast wise, I listen to history stuff because I don't want to listen to comedy.
Because you get too much of it. See, when I'm out.
As soon as I hang up with you, I'm going to be listening to more comedy. I have a list of 10 comedians I have to watch today.
Oh, I love it, man. So then you're going to schedule future events.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of, tell some of our listeners how they can find you, get involved, maybe want to set up a fundraiser, or maybe just go see a show. What's the deal, brother?
Sure. You can check us out at wisecrackers.biz, B-I-Z. That was our brand new website built by the great people at BA Media, Multimedia.
Okay.
My friend Blaze from high school, he's did a fantastic job on our website, his girlfriend Allie. You can check us out on Facebook. I believe it's just Wisecrackers Comedy. Instagram is also Wisecrackers Comedy, I think. We don't use Instagram that much. We're trying to. But Facebook is really like the best. Our website, wisecrackers.biz. There's a form on there to fill out for fundraisers. If you wanted to contact us directly, you could call Ann at Wisecrackers Hotline. It's 570-788-8451. That's the number for the office. You can give her a call and she'll gladly set up a fundraiser with you, and we'll handle anyone, any fundraiser you throw at us, we'll take care of it for you.
And what is your schedule? Is it now like a permanent schedule, or is it seasonal? Like you can say every Friday and Saturday from blank to blank, we have comedians.
Every Friday from blank until blank, we have comedians.
What does that vary a little bit?
We are 51 weeks a year currently.
Get out of here.
The only weekend we close is Christmas usually. Because it's just a bad weekend for
at Mohegan Sun every Friday and Saturday night.
Mohegan Sun every Friday and Saturday night. We'll be closed the next two weeks. This will come out after. We'll be closed the 3rd and 4th of July, or the 2nd and 3rd of July, and then the 9th and 10th, because we'll be on a first vacation in 10 years, which we can't afford thanks to COVID. But we're doing it anyway because we haven't had one. And then other than that, we'll be doing nonstop shows until the comedy train runs out.
That ain't running out, brother. That ain't running out. I love it.
I'm taking it right off the rails if I have to. We have new comedians all the time. We have old comedians all the time. You know, come in and see new people, see new fun faces. It's a lot of fun. I am not paid to say that. I genuinely do not enjoy comedy most of the time anymore, and I actually have a good time at my shows. They're very fun comedians every weekend. Different comedians every weekend. You'll never see the same comedian twice in one year usually. unless it's an emergency. We have everybody from young comedians to old comedians. We have everybody from female, male, transgender, gay. We run the gambit, LGBTQ+, you know, every walk of life, denomination, we name it, we've got it.
There you go, folks. No more excuses to just sit home on a Friday or Saturday night. Get down to the Mohegan Sun, Wilkes-Barre, spend some money, go out, take the lady out to dinner, go see a comedy club. You're not going to have a better time than that, right?
Yeah, come on. Please do.
And I'm gonna finish this, if you don't mind, with my favorite comedian of all time that's before your time, and I'm going to do his joke on you and see if it gets a laugh. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. I didn't plan this, so I don't have the proper...
Oh, you're even standing up, too?
Yeah, I don't have the proper...
Okay, good. I like when people stand up for comedy.
Okay. I wish I pre-thought this. And now my impersonation, you have to tell me who this is, of the first man on the sun. The unknown comic. You have to do it with a bag on your head, though. See, it would have been so much better.
I know the bit, but I don't know. I can't remember the name.
I can't remember his name either, but he put the bag on his head. He'd be on the Gong Show. The hilarious.
I'm blank. I know exactly. Yeah, that's great.
Nick Bruce, it was great talking to you, man. I appreciate the hour or so. You're a good man.
Oh, thank you very much, Joe.
All right.
Oh, there we go.
All right. Well, good luck with everything, man.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's good to talk to you. And hopefully you do this again. And I'll get Scott next time for you. And you guys can reminisce about other things.
No, don't tell him. I like you better.
Oh, that's a lie. It's not polite to lie. All right. I'll see you soon.
Curiosity. What are you so curious about? Everything. Mr. Curiosity.